Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us for a talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the talk show website at www.talkshow.com. And search for call ID 17702 and remember to use your Chrome browser. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGames. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. My account there is sfuoncall. If you want to follow me on my personal account, I have one of those two called Paul Franz, P-A-U-L-F-R-A-N-Z. And, of course, you can, if you follow me there, you can probably hear about baseball, you'll hear about being Catholic, hear about other things. It's just a warning, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, that's where you'll see. I don't post really a lot, but, you know, those are a few topics I do post on. Also, I have an account for Franz Games, also called Franz Games, FranzGames. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned on podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. And of course, there is the YouTube stream / channel. Look for Starfleet. I think SFU On Call will find it. Or Starfleet Universe On Call. Yeah, okay, you can find it by looking for Starfleet Universe On Call. The quick news from ADB. They finally gave me an update on everything. But I've already updated you guys on what I found from the previous weeks, where ADB wasn't so easily telling us an update for the previous week. This past week, of course, they actually had released Catalog number 53, and it was last Friday. I think it was a Friday. No, it was actually Monday. It was Monday. They actually were started to print the copies, which they'll be sending out to the game stores for your wonderful purchase. I will be getting one of those because I was a volunteer for an article or three. So I'll also be receiving that. And after I receive my copy, which will probably, I'm kind of probably low on the totem pole compared to the retailers and other people who actually bought the product. So I'm kind of low on the totem pole. So it probably won't be until next month, possibly, hopefully by end of July, we'll be doing this, or maybe we'll have to wait until August. But when I get Caps Log 53, give me a week and then I will do a review on Capital's Log number 53. You'll be discussing that and including the articles. Especially the one thing I think that we probably really want to talk about then is going to be the fictional story, because that's always very interesting, very well done. Steve Cole was busy working on Capital's Log number 53, finishing that stuff up. Of course, the different newsletters and Shapeways stuff. Steve Petrick was busy working on Caps Log number 53 and also newsletters and the Grand Master Starship book. And big surprise, Gene was working on Caps Log number 53. Yes! Big surprise there. But also she's been happy to respond to all kinds of queries on Facebook, including one which has said, I thought SFB would, they didn't sell it anymore. It's like, and Gene corrected them on that. So, it's funny when you actually do a search on Facebook, what you will find. Like Starfleet Battles. Shocker, it's not dead. I'll get back. I'll probably talk about that later in the podcast. Just a reminder, actually, of ADB. ADB has a lot of wonderful free stuff on their website. So if you go to the website, it's StarfleetGames.com, you'll find all kinds of wonderful things like player aids and counter sheets for Federation Empire. I don't think it's for Federation Empire. I'm sorry. It's generic. Of course, Federation Commander game called First Missions, which is like a beginner's manual. Also, they should have a link to the cadet training manual, which you should be able to pick up for free from one of the e-tailers, like Warehouse 23. Also, they have an introduction to Starfleet Universe Prime Directive and role-playing, which is wonderful because of you have all the different role-playing. You know, they got like GURPS and I know they had D6 in the past, D20 also. Not sure what other systems that they ported because it's a lot of work. And the question is how many people actually will buy it, you know. And I know GURPS is currently, I think Gene is working on updating that product. Obviously, just also one last reminder, which is ADB actually has a Twitter feed. This is ADB Inc. _ Amarillo. Moving on to the Starfleet SFB online tournaments, we have the Sapphire. Let's try that again. Star Tournament Series. We're starting with the first tournament. Its signups are still open, but the plan is to start the tournament on July 1st, which is Monday. So that's what they're hoping to have all the tree set up. We still have quite a few slots open. I think we currently have around 8 people currently signed up. And I hope to see you there. Find a friend, find an enemy, please. You know, I know it's $10 for as an entry fee, which means you guys put skin in the game. If you really want to play, it's $10. Don't buy Starbucks for 2 weeks. You know, don't buy the Starbucks, you know, just for 2 days, 2 times. That's all. Lord knows I don't spend a lot on Starbucks, but you know, just to let you know. And lastly, okay, move on to the library. Just to let you know that Frank LeMay we went to a nice little training session this past week. And so he's going to be able to update the library more quickly now. And after he updates the library, then I still have to have the final push on the button kind of thing, because I need to make sure that the entries are correct, that the library is correct, that it won't cause any issues. So hopefully we'll be able to get the updates and also the conversions done in a more timely fashion. But at the moment, the library has not seen any progress because I haven't processed the stuff from Frank. I have to talk to him really quick about whether I should just process what he sent me and we can go forward from there, or he's going to take everything that he had sent me, he's going to process them himself, and then we can go along the whole process and keep that going. Okay? But currently, the percentage complete done on the conversion is 74.5%. We will be seeing a better part of that. Hopefully, that will increase with Frank helping out. And with that, that is news for this week. It's me, yes, the one, the only, Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have Barry and we have Dave. They're not all the gangs here, because we have a bigger gang than this. But, you know, you can be part of the gang. Just join us and have lots of fun. So tonight, actually, I have a couple of discussions that I want to start off with, some of them, because Barry is here. I figure, with Barry here, we're going to start off with actually Omega tournament tactics. Obviously, just to let you know, the Omegas still are not sanctioned, but at the very least, we can have a good discussion on the current strain of Omega tournament ships. But also, you know, some of these tactics obviously apply to just playing Omega ships by themselves, which is, I think, is kind of, they definitely are interesting when it comes to Empires.
Oh, Am I up?
Yep, you're up.
Okay. So, with all the alpha octet chips, pretty much the phasers are your primary weapon. In terms of, it is the most power efficient, other than, it's one of the most power efficient weapon systems there is. Typically, disruptors or photons, for example, have 2, maybe 2.5 points of damage per point of power. Phasers can be, the best one is the phaser Gatling, which peaks out at 16 points of damage per point of energy. That's substantially higher. Eight times the damage to power ratio of a photon. That's huge. Now, the only limiting factor on phasers is you just can't put as much power into them as you can your heavy weapons, and that's where the heavy weapons can do a lot of their damage, is that you can just pump a lot more energy into them. And they have better ranges than the phasers. But at close range, if put your power into the phasers first. So everybody has, in the alpha octant, has identical phasers. Everybody's got P1s, they're all identical. Everyone's got P3s, they're all identical. Our firing arcs may be a little different, but for the most part, a P1 is a P1, a P3 is a P3, and a P2 is a P2. They're all the same. With the Omega Octet, nobody has the same phasers as they do in Alpha. They all fire on different tables. And in a lot of ways, there's similarities. It runs off a capacitor, just like an Alpha Octet phaser. And it's, for a P1, it's 1 point of power to charge. And then it stays charged until fired. P3s are half a point of power per. You can fire a P1 as a P3. So all that pretty much stays the same. The difference between the alphas and the omegas is the omega, depending on, and they've got a whole bunch of different firing tables, and they're all different. And with the Mazaron, they use the wide-angle phasers, which tend to be a little more consistent than an alpha octet phaser, in that if you insist on rolling only sixes, you'll actually do a little better. Mm-hmm. But if you roll ones, you're not going to do as well. But the wide-angle phasers, on average, do less damage than an alpha phaser. And that can add up quite a bit. So at say, a range 2, for example, if I'm firing a whole bunch of alphas, wide-angle phasers, say P1s, on average, they'll probably do 3/4 of a point to a point of damage less per phaser than an alpha phaser, on average. So that means that the Mazaron phasers, even though are quite a bit weaker for the same energy input, they're quite a bit weaker than alpha phasers. So that's a big disadvantage for the ship, and that's one of the reasons why I maxed it out at 8 P1s and 4 P3s, which for tournament protocol, that's the maximum I could put on a ship, but they're not. It would be more equivalent to 6 and 3 rather than 8 and 4 if you compared it to, say, an alpha ship, because they just do less damage.
Mm-hmm.
On the plus side, it means you've got a little bit more phaser padding, but your phaser output is definitely reduced. The other disadvantage is that the wide-angle phasers, the P3 versions of it, have a hard time picking out drones. So a wide-angle P3 only does 4 points of damage on a 1, 2, or 3, not a 1, 2, 3, or 4. That's a significant difference. It means that if you're trying to take out incoming drones, you're going to have to fire a lot more phasers to do it. And that adds up.
Oh,
and it means that you're drone.
Yeah, sure, but in most cases, as we've talked about this before, which is I don't think really the Omega tournament ships really should be fighting against drones anyway. You know, and I think it's rare to have the Alpha Octant and the Omega interacting.
Mm-hmm. Well, sorry. I'm done eating. Jesus, well. There is one, of course, Omega race that does use actual drones. But, as you pointed out, they're not going to be facing drones that often. But, irrespective, those tournament cruisers are going to be facing most people, when you say, hey, I'd like to fly an Omega ship, a Mazaron ship in a tournament, 9 out of 10 times your opponent is going to be flying an Alpha ship. So you will be facing drones quite a bit. In any case, the Mazarons have weak phasers. Now, their other weapons are they have tachyon guns, and the tachyon guns are their heavy weapons. They have 4 of them, but quite a few of the Omega ships, the heavy weapons, direct fire weapons. You have 2 FA, 1 LFL, and 1 RFR. So, unless you actually centerline your opponent, you're only going to be getting 3 of your 4 heavy weapons to fire, which is a major downside.
Yeah, well, it can be,
right.
But with some of those arcs, you also have a good ability with RFR. You got that whole right arc, so you can still fire while your opponent's chasing you.
That is true. That is the advantage of that. Is that you have a better chance of firing off time. Tachyon guns are interesting, and I like this because it gives a variant to standard tactics, in that the tachyon gun is a variable energy, variable damage weapon. The more power you put, it doesn't have an overload function per se, but the more energy you put into it, the shorter the range. And you can put up to 8 energy into it. And when you do that, its max range is like 1. So
that which is interesting, because there are, of course, it's kind of standard that when you overload something, the range shortens to, you know, usually a max range of 8. But with that weapon, the more energy you put in, the shorter range it becomes, to the point where it's like it's a point blank range weapon.
Right. And generally, you'll never charge it all the way. Rather, at the last minute, like, oh my, I'm at range one, suck the batteries down and put them into the weapon because I can actually fire it with full power. And it's a very accurate weapon. The hit number is 1 through 5, I think, out to range 15. So it's extremely accurate. But in another way, it's kind of like a disruptor in that the further at same energy levels, the longer the range, the less damage it does. So I think at range 15, yes, you can hit on a 1 through 5 and still do 5 points of damage. But it takes, I think, it takes 4 points of energy to hit that. So you put 4 in, you get 5 out, hits on 1 through 5. That's pretty good for range 15. But remember, it's a 2-turn arming weapon. That's the other thing. And each turn of arming, you can put up to a minimum of 1, maximum of 7 points of energy in each turn of arming, with the total being a max of 8. And then you can add energy once it's armed to increase the arming level further. But once it's armed, you can't take energy away from it. It's kind of like an overload. You can't unoverload a weapon without discharging it and then rearming it. Which sucks for a 2-turn arming weapon because it takes 2 turns to be able to bring it back up. The interesting thing about it is that, let's say I want to put 5 points of energy into my TACJAD guns. I can put 4 and 1, or 1 and 4, or 2 and 3, or 3 and 2. I can split up the energy I put in over the turns. So it might make sense that if I'm far away from my opponent, put 4 points of energy in to all my TACJAD guns. I'm going to move slow because I'm putting a lot of energy in. But the following turn, I can put 1 point of energy into each gun to complete the arming, move really fast, and still have a reasonably armed weapon. So that is a nice side to the TACJAD gun, that you can go heavy and slow, and then on the turn where you're actually firing, I can just put a small amount in and go really fast on the turn that I'm actually going to have my firing pass. Now, there's a downside.
There's no
downside is that the hold cost for the TACJAD gun is horrible. It is half the energy you have in it. So if you had it armed to the full 8 points, it would cost 4 points of energy to hold that TACJAD gun.
Sounds like the Saltorian's particle cannon.
Yes, but a Saltorian particle cannon, I think you don't have to, yes, you don't have to put the full amount. In other words, it turns off a capacitor.
Right, but it's a leaky capacitor. You have to put it to maintain like a 5 points of energy in your capacitor. You have to put 2.5 in each turn.
Right, but if you don't put that in, it just leaks out a certain amount.
It goes bye bye.
Weapon arm, but at a lower energy level.
The energy goes away if you don't charge it.
Yeah, the energy goes away, but you don't have to. In other words, if I have an 8-point TACJAD gun, I need 4 points of power that I have to put in. If I put in 3, the weapon discharges. I have to put in four, or
right,
start
right. In which
all
case,
learning cycle
all over
again.
That's true. That's the worst again about it, because
that's a
the
bad
particle
situation.
Yeah, the particle cannon, you actually can basically discharge it for the one turn, and then be able to still fire it later on that same turn, even though you just wasted a lot of
not
energy.
Not only that, but I have to announce the discharge. So I've announced to my opponent, "Hey, I've discharged my two-turn arming weapon." Oops.
Well, it's
he
like
knows that I have
yeah.
nothing.
Well, it's
okay.
Like a photon torpedo, same way, or a plasma torpedo. That if you partially charge it and you stop, you have to announce that it's discharged.
Yes. Yes. But the cost of, and the other thing is that, let's say I charge them all up to 8 points. Well, at range one, they do 16 points of damage. Hey, I've got four overloaded photons. Max range of one. Hold cost of 16. I'm moving real slow with a short range weapon. My opponent, if they know that, they can just dance around at range three. I can't catch them. And they can shoot at me, and I can't shoot back. That is the downside. That's why nobody would ever charge it to that highest level unless you know that you're guaranteed the shot. So if it's a second turn of arming and I'm at range one, yeah, during EA, yeah, go ahead and max it out.
Yeah, well, that's the same case for, like, disruptors. You know, you wouldn't overload a disruptor unless you know you could get the shot.
Right, but range one is completely different than range eight. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Understood.
With range one, let's say I'm up against the Klingon. He can overload his disruptors, get to range three, fire, knowing I can't return fire. And if he just used standards, okay, he can fire standards. I have nothing to reply. He can dance away because he's moving fast, and I can't catch him. And that's an unreturned shot.
Understood.
And my phasers are nothing to write home about. They're weak. That's the problem with them. But on the other hand, it's an accurate weapon that does a lot of damage. And if I play it right, I can be moving very fast with a heavily armed weapon. So there's that thing of how do you know, very often one tactic to use is to corner this turn one is do a corner dodge and put a lot of power into the, say, 4 points of power into the tachyon guns. Turn two, put 1 point of power in, getting them to the energy level five, which I think gives you a range of eight. But I've got 40 points of energy for that tournament cruiser, and I put 4 points into heavy weapons, and I've got four armed heavy weapons with a max range of eight doing more damage than overloaded disruptors. I can move, and if I get really close, I can bump it up on batteries to 6 points and do considerably more than disruptors. And then the following turn, now here's the nice thing. I've done a firing pass. So now I have to two-turn arming weapon. Now with a Fed, with its photons, for example, if you're off turn, you still have to put a minimum of 2 points of energy, whether it be photons or 3 points of energy per for Hellbores or 4 points of energy for a PPD, I'm putting a lot of power on my off turn of arming when I don't have any weapons online. The Mazron in that situation can say, hey, I'll just put 1 point of power into each gun. That's nothing. So on my SNF firing pass, I can still arm my weapons and move fast and get out of there. So that arming cycle does have a lot of flexibility. But you can get caught by it. If you have to be, if you're going to arm it, you have to make sure that you're holding it is a bad thing to do. You have to fire it every other turn.
Understood. But you know, sometimes the situations occur that you have to hold it.
In that case, it gets real expensive. Now, another tactic to use is to not arm the tachyon gun, and your opponent thinks you're arming it, and so therefore you're one turn off, and you can be in a situation where they think you've got to put power in to hold it, and you're still on your, and you're on your final turn of arming. You can be fast when he thinks you're going to be slow. So you can mix things up that way. So, for example, turn one, I go into the corner. He thinks I'm putting a lot of power in. Okay. And he knows that my next turn, I'm going to be fast. But in reality, I've put, I'm on my, so he's running away while I'm on my first turn of arming, but he thinks I'm on my second turn of arming. And then, hey, the following turn, I'm fast when he thinks I should be slow. So you can play games like that. So that's one of the things I like about the ship is that it gives you the ability to play games with it. You can try all these tactics and keep your opponent guessing. So. That is a nice feature of it. Now, the other weapon system it has is the tachyon missile. And those are something where I'm not happy with the way the rules were written for the tachyon missiles. And I know what... oh, gosh, what's his name? The guy who came up with this system? This was Omega. Who is the guy who created it to begin with?
Bruce Grohl.
Bruce Grohl, yeah. And he said that what he started to do is he said that the problem with drones is that you can have huge numbers of drones out on the board. It's just a lot of stuff to keep track of. So he wanted to set it up with the tachyon missile that it's a drone-style weapon, and they're more capable than drones, but you can't have as many of them on the board as drones. So tachyon missiles, for the most part, the launchers have less capacity and they fire slower or less often. And there's another restriction on them. But these are really powerful missiles with lots of options. And they're completely modular in their construction. And there was a whole couple of pages on in the book on tachyon missile construction of all the modules that you can fit into these things. So you basically have a missile body, and then you can put propulsion modules in there. You can put warhead modules in there. You can put armor modules in there. You can put anti-tractor modules in there. So these are big, heavy missiles that can actually have some anti-tractor capability. But you don't have too many of them. One of the things it does, for example, an ARAC only holds 3 missiles. A BRAC only holds 5 missiles. So you get one less missile per rack. And for every 2 racks you have, you can only fire one. So if I have 2 BRACs, I can fire 1 missile per turn. And I have to alternate the racks. So, and each missile takes up 2 control channels. And the Mazaron heavy cruiser only has 6 control channels. So she can only have 3 missiles in the air at once. So that is a limitation. What I found was I put missiles with moderate amounts of basically explosive modules, which could basically provide a warhead, and armor modules to determine how much damage it takes. And what you end up with is these missiles that can take more damage than a drone, do a little more damage than a drone, have enough anti-tractor capability that it would take a 2-point tractor rather than a 1-point tractor to hold it. But you only have so many of them. The downside to that, one other limitation for the tachyon missiles is when fired, they have a 4 impulse myopic zone. And I think if they impact their target before the 4 impulse is over, they just go away. They hit, but the warhead is not armed, so they just basically don't do anything. So there is effectively a minimum range, or you have to program them to spend 4 impulses, ballistic course, and then change. I don't know if you can. I don't think you can change targets. So you're basically screwed. If you're too close when you fire them, you can't be at point-blank range and just feed drones to your opponent. You have to fire them from a distance away.
Mm-hmm.
And they're highly vulnerable to counter drones. So if I've got one that takes 8 points to kill it, and it does 12 points if it hits, or let's say it does 6. Yeah, let's say it takes 8 points to kill it, and 16 points if it hits. I can't remember the exact numbers, but I think that's about right. So it's basically tougher than a large drone, does a little less damage than a large drone, but that's obviously it. Nobody wants to take a 16-point drone hit. But one Type 1 drone takes it out. So that was the problem, was that these missiles, with their slow firing rate, were highly vulnerable to opponents' drones.
What drones? In the Omega Octant.
Well, I know.
I'm sorry. When people compare, say, oh, well, they can't go deal with drones. Well, how often are those ships meant to really be designed to fight Alpha. Really?
And I've heard that argument before. But we're talking tournament cruises, which
I know.
Means that...
I think we've had this discussion in the past, which is basically that I don't think those two should ever interact. Have a separate tournament, which is just Omegas, and that's it. You know, because those ships were designed to fight those ships. And Lord knows, I think most of the umpires of the Omega at some time met because of the dynamic nature of their borders.
Right, but I was thinking that, you know, there's a certain library of tournament cruisers, and at this point, part of the problem is that it's the same old that we've been playing for 15, 20 years or more, that those tournament cruisers are pretty much the same. Everybody knows what it is. There's no new game in town. There's nothing new. And I'm saying, hey, here's an opportunity. We've got these races here. Because I'm sure that 90%, if you go on the SFB online, 90% of your games, I'm guessing, are tournament games. Is that correct?
These days, maybe not. It's being pushed more towards lately campaigns.
Campaigns, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a sense that I guess people are starting to get tired of the old tournament games. It's like, okay, I've done that so many times. It's like, it's getting boring. And that's what I'm looking at. It's like, hey, maybe we could spice this up, add something new into the mix.
Oh, agreed. Oh, I do not disagree with that.
And that's the whole... Yeah. So I'm looking at that going, okay, but if you're going to do that, then you need to have a ship that is balanced against Alpha. Now, call it a Mega, call it...
Yeah, but
what you want.
But as you pointed out, the whole problem with that issue there is that one, they were never the ships were never designed to face one another. Number one.
Yeah.
Number two, the question is when it comes to adding Omega tournament ships, as you notice, some of the rules just don't work. I know, and some of them don't
work.
They
don't work against the Megaships.
I know. The rules have never been really fixed in that.
Well, if we're going to fix them, why not fix them right?
Understood.
You know, that's all I'm saying is that, and the other thing is that, hey, there's been almost no play test for these ships. Why? Well, nobody wants to play them, so you don't get playtest. At least if you have a tournament cruiser, hey, that's something that people can playtest with. It at least gives that race a chance to get playtested.
Empire, but yeah. Understood.
Yeah. I know, it's an old argument.
What argument? Oh, yeah, the Omega versus Alpha, yeah. That's an old argument.
Yeah. And then the other thing was that Bruce Groff put into the Omega rulebook that the Tachyon missiles are the ultimate modular drones. It's designed to be the most flexible modular missile system there is. And then if you look at it, the Alpha Octet, the standard old drones have more options than the Tachyon missiles.
Yeah. Well, at the same time, the thing is, I'm not sure about timelines here. That's the one issue. And that is, Bruce Grawl make it, you know, make the tachyon missiles better than the drones, and then all of a sudden all these drone modules got added onto it? You know?
If you look at the rules, he says, okay, this module was this year, this module was this year. So he put in that different modules are available in different years, and some of the years are like late F-ship years.
Oh,
long after the General War.
Understood.
Some of these modules became available.
But I'm talking about writing of the rules. When were those modules added?
Certainly Captain's Edition was long since out when Bruce Grawl wrote his stuff. So, no, Swordfish modules, Spearfish modules, all of that, and armor on drones, and multi-warhead drones, long since predate the tachyon missiles.
Understood.
But, yeah. So, yeah, when Bruce Grawl was writing his stuff, all those drones were available. So here, on the one hand, he's saying, hey, it's this ultimate modular. On the other hand, it's less flexible than the non-modular one, with less options. So, like, And I said to myself, okay, if you look at the Omega Octet, who were the Mazarons fighting? Turns out a lot of the opponents that the Mazarons were fighting, they have a lot of civil wars. So they would have been fighting other Mazaron ships. They would have been fighting other races with tachyon missiles. Okay. In the Alpha Octet, Klingons were fighting Kazis. Okay. They're both armed with drones. Guess what? Oh, they've got drones. We need anti-drones. Missile, counter-missile. Okay. But there are no counter-missiles in the Omega Octet. They don't have dogfight drones. They don't have ADDs. And you would think that their drones would have. They did put in one thing that said, okay, we're going to make them a little more resistant to tractors, which Bruce had to do. Otherwise, tachyon missiles would be like, oh, I've got this big powerful drone. Oh, got this 1-point tractor. Well, that's useless now. You know, I can only control three of them. Well, even a tournament cruiser has two tractor beams. Oh, okay, so I'm just tractoring. I only have to deal with one. You know.
Yep.
And I can keep the other two on tractor. So, there is that. What I did was I basically said, okay, I needed to come up with a module to put on a tachyon missile to make it a little more resistant to drones, is all I was doing. Which I thought was reasonable.
Yeah.
And then I went on and said, what's that?
I said, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so I created a couple of module types and ran them past Steve Petrick and said, hey, what do you think of these? And he's like, no. Like, okay, we have the ultimate modular weapon. We could use a few more modules for it, right? Basically, I was saying, well, you know, we could put a one-shot ADD or something like that on a Tachyon missile. I mean, it has two control channels, so it should have a little more flexibility in terms of what you can do with it.
Oh, understood, but...
Yeah. And, of course, when you add a drone defense module like that, you have to pull away other capabilities. So the one that has drone defenses in it is going to do less damage, it's going to have less armor, it's going to be more vulnerable to getting taken out by phasers or other things. But it just seemed to me that I needed to give it some means that I'm going up against the Kazini. Well, he uses one of his drone racks to counter all four of my Tachyon missile. Or maybe, you know.
Hmm?
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it for the Nazron. Any comments or anything like that? Or
no, my biggest issue is that I'm not that familiar with the Omega ships, you know, as much as you are, so it's hard to comment on the tactic
right.
that you're describing, and with those weapons,
it does make for a ship that's fun to play. It plays differently than anything else, which means that you can have a little more variety in the game, and I thought that was kind of interesting. But then again, I'm the one who likes to play the Masters Tournament, too.
Oh, let's not get started there. I like to play the Masters Tournament. I think that if we only have the Sapphire Star Tournaments, where it's single elimination and it's just a one format, I think it'll be a big loss not to have a Masters Tournament, you know, a Masters-type tournament where the whole idea is that you don't get a mastery of more than just the one ship that you like to fly.
Yeah, oh yeah. Now here's another thing, you know, you've had all these, you like to play the Andromeda, and that plays completely differently than everything else.
Oh yeah, and I think that's why some people really do not like to fly against it. And I went in detail about some of the tactics that the Andromeda needs to use, and of course, sometimes what people need to use against the Andromeda, and of course, the flying the Andromeda is not.
It's
not an easy ship. So,
no, it's not. Well, it has a lot of weaknesses to it. It really does.
Well, it does have some weaknesses, have some strength. The defense is a big strength. The biggest issue with that strength is that in the tournament, it's really been curtailed in the effort to have it so that it's not an overpowering ship, because I still remember to this day Paul Scott mentioning how the biggest issue for the Andromeda, you know, the Andromeda when it comes to fighting it, he said with a trimming of the offensive weapons and all this, he kept on saying that that's not the solution. That's not the problem. The problem is the defense. It's got such a strong defense that it can wipe people with the board. You know, even with the weak offense, it can still survive and beat people. And it wasn't until, you know, the batteries were trimmed that, you know, it really got, well, at that point, no one wanted to increase the firepower on it, which I think it should be restored to its original armament, which is 2 TR heavies and 6 phaser twos. you know, but have it so that the batteries are down to like 3 batteries. I still remember Paul Scott saying that you should be able, you know, I think he thought that, you know, the drum should only have 2 batteries. Like, no. You can't, it's unflyable with 2. Truly unflyable with 2.
It runs out of power, and it doesn't have, it really can't, yeah, it can take that first alpha strike, but then it can't dissipate it.
Right,
you
exactly.
You can't get rid of that energy.
Right, exactly. I mean, at all, you can't do any kind of even possible panel dump at all. It's bad enough with 3. 3 you can possibly, but you have to work hard for it. I agree. 4
sure,
is,
you can take 60 points of damage with no internals and a single volley. No other ship can do that. Well, unless you reinforce with 20 points, but that's rare.
Right.
But you have a total of 100 points of protection, as opposed to an Alpha, which has 180 points of shields.
Okay, 90 plus 72. No, 152.
100 versus 152. Yeah. Now, that 100 is a little more usable because you got front and back versus split over 6.
To a certain degree, but that's also, but when you're talking about the Andromedas, that's also its weakness. Because it has half the arc is all that same shield. It's not like, you know, with a regular alpha quadrant, alpha octant ship, where you can just turn one turn, boom, you got a fresh shield. Andromeda knows they have to turn around 180 degrees just to get a new shield, quote unquote shield, into arc.
That is true. Now, having said that rear arc can take almost as much punishment as 2 normal shields.
Yeah, and here's the crazy thing to me, if you think about it, and that is that people, they will wait for that rear panel to show up. How many people actually do that against another alpha?
That they wait for the rear what?
Rear shield to come around.
Oh, they wait for
They'll actually take the initial hit from an alpha and then just wait for you to turn around and then fire on the rear shields when you turn around or finish a battle pass and run off. Nobody does.
Nobody does that against. Yeah. And the reason you can against an Andromedan is because his offense is weak enough. I mean, if he had the same offense as any other alpha, you couldn't wait that long because you wouldn't have anything to return fire with if you waited that long.
Yeah, which is another reason why it should have, at least better than it currently has. I think it's 2 TR. I gotta double check with it. I think it's 2 TRLs and 4 phaser 8s. I'm sorry, 8 phaser 2s.
Right.
Or 3 TRLs and 6 phaser 2s. I forget what the current sanctioned version is, because ADB removed it off the website. It's like, thank you. I can find out. I just have to look up the tournament. The tournament SSDs for 2012. The tournament module.
Yeah. Did they take it off the website?
No. What they replaced... Here's the problem with the Andromedan on the website. They put the playtest version on the website. They removed the sanctioned version. And as I was actually discussing this with Steve Petrick just yesterday, and basically he said, "Well, is the Andromedan isn't it not sanctioned anymore?" I went, my understanding is that, yes, we have a sanction in Andromeda. It's very, it's weak. You can play it. I would never play it. I have played it, and I will play it in the future. I just didn't play it for the Sapphire Star tournament, you know, the first one.
Right.
I'm going to be flying the Saltorian. That's what I'm going to be flying.
Mm-hmm. So there's basically, they don't know what to do with the Andromeda, so they've given up on it.
Right. Well,
I mean, it's been how many years?
Well, the problem is getting playtest reports.
What's that?
You have to have people playing it and writing playtest reports. How many people are, you know, how many people am I going to be able to find that actually are going to want to play against an Andromeda?
About as many as you're going to find to play against an Omega.
Yeah, exactly. So I just have to, for the Sapphire Star tournament, because somebody actually picked the Andromeda, I have to look up the 2012. Tournament module, because I feel very confident that that actually is, it's in there.
So let me ask a question. If you could rewrite the Andromeda rules any way you wanted to, would you change anything to make a tournament cruiser balanced, viable, and fun that people would enjoy playing against it and playing it? What would you do if you could change that, those rules? Would you touch them, or do you think, nah, the rules are perfect, the ship is perfect, nah, doesn't need any change?
Well, here, Barry, here's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why people don't want to play against the Andromeda is basically because of one, ship design, two, is weapons. I mean, the defense.
Ship design what?
Weapons. You know, we got this. Yeah. We have the DizDev. The TR, you know, the tractor repulsor beams, and, you know, whatever. Not that strange. Phasers, not that strange.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the defensive systems that really mess with people. They want shields for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Andromedas are currently the only ship in the entire SFB that does not use shields at all. Or anything that even can be considered a shield. And I think that that is the cause of the consternation that people have with the Andromeda.
Right.
So the only way to, quote unquote, fix the Andromeda for people is give the Andromeda shields.
Okay.
Of course, that would to give them shields, it would totally change the dynamic of the ship itself. You'd have to give the Andromeda more power because it would need more power to do everything it needs to do.
Well, remember that the PA panels also suck a lot of power.
Yeah, 5 points.
More power than shields to run.
That's true.
So, and it is a two-thirds mover, and the TRs are a little bit, are very power efficient.
Well,
so let's say you had an Andromeda with shields instead of PAs. But let's say the shields didn't work entirely like regular shields. Let's say they were shields that had some built-in regeneration capability.
So maybe something along the lines of the Juggernauts?
Maybe, which has that shield generator, that
it's actually armor. It's what it is, but it can regenerate the armor.
Well, yeah, but you put energy in for damage out. It's basically armor that acts as shields.
Right.
That you can repair like shields.
Right.
But no, I was thinking more like give it shield boxes. Maybe not as well. If you did it so that it, let's say you gave it 60 shields in front, 40 shields in the back instead of power absorbers, gave it back its full batteries, and maybe allowed it to use, well, you wouldn't give it any ability to reinforce. But you might say it gets diamond shield boxes back for free at a certain rate. And maybe you could have cheaper damage control and more of it. So damage control might be 1 point of power gives you one box back instead of two. And you might be able to put 8 points in per turn, say. How would something like that fly? You'd have to give it a little more power, though.
Yeah. I think people would be I think something like that would be a lot more accepted by players than the current Andromeda.
Yeah.
Because it's so out there. And that's the thing is, that's why I like it. It's not just another stinking alpha ship.
I know. I just said what I've been trying to say about Omega. It's not just another stinking alpha ship.
Oh, I agree. I agree. That's why I know some people like to play it, including Peter Bakia.
Yeah.
But, you know... Getting getting people to play them is like pulling freaking teeth sometimes, you know, to play something outside of what they're used to playing.
Right.
So, I think with that we will wrap up for this evening. We've had a wonderful discussion here with Barry Kirk about Omega tournament tactics.
Before you wrap up. I had written some term papers on tactics for the Omegas a number of years back. And I posted those term papers on Google Docs. And I think I gave the links out. Do you remember? Do you still have those links?
I have to look to see if I still have the links. It's possible I still have them. I just have to find them.
Okay. I'll try to find them in the next couple of days and email you those links.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you email me the links, I will add them to the SFU on call website so people can have access to them, find them easily.
Maybe next week we could discuss the Kolodar.
Oh, I'd love to.
Yeah. And that way you can get a chance to read my tactics paper on that ship too.
Cool.
Before.
Mm-hmm. I think that'd be great.
Okay. Now I'll go ahead and wrap up.
Okay. With that, I'll actually wrap up. And with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.
Good night.